acres altogether, held 100 tents and dozens of trucks that had become homes. She saw hovels that had been cobbled together of scrap metal and wooden boards. Women moved through the camp herding ragged children, while mangy dogs ran through, barking for food or attention. Folks had lived here a long time, long enough to string laundry lines and create yards full of junk. No one would want to live this way, and yet here they were. The Great Depression. For the first time, she understood. It wasn't just banksters running off with people's money, or a movie theater closing its doors, or people standing in line for free soup. Hard times meant poverty, no jobs, nowhere else to go. Jean stepped out of her tent and waved at Loretta. Loretta walked toward her, strangely glad for an adult nearby.
"Hey, Ms. Dewey,"
Loretta said.
"Your mama left about an hour ago, looking for work." "My mom has never had a real job."
Jean smiled.
"Spoken like a teenager. It don't matter, though. Experience, I mean. The jobs out here are field jobs, mostly. They won't hire us in diners and stores and such. They want them jobs for themselves."
"It's just wrong."
Jean shrugged, as if to say, "What difference does that make?"
"When times is tough and jobs is scarce, folks blame the outsider. It's human nature. And right now, that's us. In California, it used to be the Mexicans, and the Chinese before that, I think."
Loretta stared out at the debris-strewn camp.
"My mom never gives up," she said. "But maybe this time she should. We could go to Hollywood or San Francisco."
Loretta hated how her voice broke on that. Suddenly, she was thinking of her dad and Stella and her grandparents and the farm. More than anything right now, she wanted to be home, to have Grandma give her one of her no-nonsense hugs and slip her a bite of something.
"Come here, honey,"
Jean said, opening her arms. Loretta walked into the woman's embrace, surprised by how much it helped, even from a stranger.
"You'll have to grow up, I reckon," Jean said. "Your mom probably wants you to be young, but them days are gone."
Loretta held back tears. She didn't want to grow up, certainly not in a place like this. She looked up at Jean's kind, sad face.
"So what should I do?"
"First, go to the ditch and carry lots of water back. You gotta boil and strain it before you drink it, mind. I'll give you some cheesecloth. Doing laundry would help your mom out."
Loretta left Jean standing outside the tent and picked up a pair of buckets and walked to the ditch. A line of women was already squatting along the banks or on wooden planks in the brown water, washing clothes. Children played at the edges of the dirty water. Loretta filled both buckets with the ugly water and carried them back to the tent. She passed a family of six living in a shack made of tin and wood scraps. By the time she got back to the tent, Aunt was up and sitting in the dirt. He'd obviously been crying.
"Everybody left me," he whined. "I thought..."
"I'm sorry," Loretta said, putting her buckets down. Aunt shot to his feet and tackled her. Loretta held him tightly.
"I was scared."
"Me too, Auntie,"
Loretta said, as comforted by the feel of him as he was by her. When he drew back, his tears were gone and his smile was back.
"Wanna play catch? I got my baseball somewhere."
"Nope, I gotta boil this water and make breakfast. Then we're gonna wash clothes."
"Mom didn't tell us to do that,"
Aunt whined.
"We've gotta help."
Aunt looked up suddenly.
"She's coming back, ain't she?"
"She's coming back. She's looking for work so we can move."
"Phew. You reckon she'll find it?"
"I hope so."
After a breakfast of tasteless wheat cereal, Loretta washed the dishes and put everything back into boxes, which were ready for packing up when the truck returned. That way, they could leave this stinking place the second Mom got back. By noon, Elsa's fingers ached and her hands were burned pink from bleach and lye. She had scrubbed the kitchen, dining, and sitting room floors and then rubbed lemon-scented oil into the wood until the planks shone. She'd pulled dozens of leather-bound books out of bookshelves and dusted behind them, unable to stop herself from smelling the leather, the paper, even reading a sentence or two. Her life as a reader felt far away. When her cleaning was done, she scalded two plump chickens in boiling water and plucked them, her mouth watering at the idea of roasted chicken. An hour later, she hauled wet laundry outside and fed it through the metal wringer's presses, turning the crank until her shoulders screamed at the motion. All of this she did under the watchful eye of the woman of the house, who never offered Elsa a lunch break, a glass of water, or an introduction. "That's it, then," the woman said at just past 5 o'clock, as Elsa was in the kitchen again, ironing a man's shirt. "You are done." Elsa slowly released her hold on the iron and sighed in relief. She was parched and starving. "I noticed the pantry could use some organizing, ma'am. Touching our food? Of course not. Crime around here is sky high since your kind moved in. Our schools are full of your dirty children." "Ma'am, certainly, as a Christian, you must..." "How dare you question my faith? Out!" she said, flinging a pointed finger toward the door. "And don't you come back! The Mexicans are better workers than you dirty Okies. They don't sass, and they don't stay in town after the crops are done. We never should have deported them." Elsa was too tired and dispirited to argue. At least she'd found work. Today's money was a start. She had to think of it like that. She said, "Fine, ma'am," and waited to be paid. "What?" the woman said, crossing her arms. "My pay." "Oh, right." The woman dug into her pocket and pulled out some coins and dropped them in Elsa's outstretched palm. 4 dimes. 40 cents, Elsa said. "For 10 hours? Shall I take it back? I could tell my husband how insubordinate you've been." 40 cents. Elsa walked away, pushed through the door, let it bang shut behind her. She got in the truck and drove down the driveway, trying not to panic. 40 cents for a day's work. Now she knew why the folks in the camp walked to find work. Gas was already a luxury she couldn't afford. Tomorrow she'd join the people leaving the ditch bank camp before dawn in the hopes of finding work in the fields. The pay had to be better than this. But she'd be damned if her children would work in the fields. They would go to school and get an education. Out on the main road, she saw a slim man walking along the roadside, his shoulders hunched in defeat, carrying a tattered knapsack. Black hair hung in dirty strands from a holy hat. 1 foot was bare. Rafe. It couldn't be. But still. She slowed the truck to a stop and rolled down the window. It was not her husband, of course. "You need a ride, friend?" she asked. The man glanced sideways. The skin on his face was tightly drawn over sharp bones. His cheeks were hollow. "Nah. Thanks, though. Ain't nowhere to go, and I got me a rhythm." Elsa stared at him for a long moment, thinking, "Yeah, none of us has anywhere to go." Then she sighed and put her foot to the gas. That day in camp, Loretta learned the flexibility of time. Until today, it had always seemed fundamental, reliable. Even in the midst of heartbreak, losing her father and her best friend and aunt's illness, time had soothed with its consistency. Time heals all wounds, people told her, underscoring its essential kindness. She knew, in fact, that some wounds deepened over time instead of lessened. Still, she'd relied on time's constancy. The sun rose and the sun fell every day. In between, there were chores and meals and markers, a schedule of daily life. Here, hobbled by misery, time crawled forward. There was nowhere to go and nothing to do. She couldn't leave Aunt and go hunting for doves or jackrabbits. Instead, she and her brother sat on the lumpy camp mattress and Loretta read The Wonderful Wizard of Oz out loud. But the book, with its terrible tornado in Kansas, wasn't as fantastic as it used to be, not when you were staying in a place that looked like a disaster zone. In fact, Loretta thought it might give them both nightmares. It was just past 5:30 p.m. when Loretta heard the familiar rumble of their truck. She pushed Aunt away and jumped out of bed. Outside, on the rutted road, a crowd of people were walking this way. Mom pulled up next to the tent and parked. Loretta waited impatiently for her to shut off the engine and step out of the truck. When Mom finally did exit the truck, she just stood there, hunched over, looking tired, defeated.
Mom?
Mom straightened quickly and smiled, but Loretta saw that it was a lie, that smile. The defeat in Mom's blue eyes was frightening.
I did laundry and soaked beans,
Loretta said, suddenly wanting Mom back, the woman who was a full charge-ahead workhorse, who never cried or gave up, who was never afraid.
We can leave after dinner.
I got a job today, Mom said. I worked all day for 40 cents.
40 cents? That's not even enough to...
I know.
40 cents?
Now we know what we're up against, Loretta. We can't spend money on rent or gas.
Wait, you promised we'd only stay one day.
I know, Mom said. I was wrong. We can't go anywhere yet. We need to make money, not just keep spending it.
You want us to stay here? Here?
Loretta felt horror rise up and turn into a tremulous, terrifying anger directed at her mother. In some small speck of her, she knew it wasn't fair, but there was nothing she could do to draw it back.
No! No!
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to do.
You lied, just like he did. Everyone lies!
Mom pulled Loretta into her arms. She fought to break free, but her mother held fast, tightened her hold until Loretta gave up and slumped forward and wept.
I talked to Jane. Cotton picking season is supposed to be the time we can save money and pay our bills. If we are really careful and save every penny, maybe we will be able to leave in December.
Loretta drew back, feeling shaky and uncertain. Angry.
Can we go back to Texas? We have enough for gas.
The doctor said Aunt's lungs wouldn't heal for at least a year. You remember how sick he was.
But he refused to wear his gas mask in the beginning. Maybe now...
No, Loretta. That's not an option.
She pushed the hair out of Loretta's face with a gentle touch.
I need your help with Aunt. He won't understand.
I don't understand. This is America. How can this be happening to us?
Hard times, Elsa said.
That's a darn lie.
Language, Loretta,
Mom said tiredly. Then she walked over to the truck and climbed up into the bed and began unstrapping the narrow, black, wood-burning stove that Rose and Tony had used in the dugout years ago, before they'd built the farmhouse. Loretta hated the idea of unpacking that stove with every fiber of her being. A stove meant home. It meant you were staying someplace, settling in. They'd imagined this stove heating a new house. With a sigh, she climbed up alongside her mom and untied the straps. Together, both of them grunting, they muscled the heavy stove out of the truck and onto the weedy grass in front of the tent. The buckets and a metal wash basin were beside it.
Great,
Loretta said. Now they looked like all the rest of the poor, desperate people living in tents in this ugly field.
Yeah, Mom said.
There was nothing else to say. They went into the tent, where Aunt was lying on the dirt floor beside the mattress, playing with his toy soldiers.
Mom, you came back,
Loretta saw the pain flash across her mother's face.
I will always come back. You two are my whole life, okay? Don't ever be afraid of that.
That night, Elsa lay awake long after the kids had said their prayers and fallen asleep on either side of her. Moonlight illuminated the canvas walls, setting the small interior aglow. Careful not to disturb the kids, she found a scrap of paper and a pencil and sat up to write.
Dear Tony and Rose, greetings from California. After a grueling drive that was more fun than any of us expected, we came to the San Joaquin Valley. It's a beautiful place. Mountains, crops that are green and growing, rich brown earth. Our tent is near a river. We've made friends with folks from the south. The kids are excited to start school tomorrow. How are things with you? You can write to us, care of General Delivery at the Post Office in Welty, California. Pray for us as we pray for you. Love, Elsa, Loretta, and Aunt.
The next morning, Elsa woke before the sun rose and began carrying water back to the campsite, putting it on to boil on the stove. In the darkness, smoke drifted from tent to tent. She heard the clang of water buckets being filled, of grease popping in cast iron pans. People began to walk toward the road. Men, women, children. At 7 o'clock, she wakened the children, got them dressed, and herded them out of the tent, where she fed them some hot mush. Not enough, but she knew now she had to save every single penny, and used the newly boiled, strained, and cooled water to wash their hair and faces. She was so grateful the kids had done laundry yesterday. Aunt tried to wiggle free.
Why do I gotta be cleaner?
Because today is the first day of school, Elsa said.
Yippee!
Aunt said, jumping up and down. Loretta took a step back.
Tell me you're kidding.
Education is everything, Loretta. You know that. You will be the first Martinelli to go to college.
But...
No buts. Hard times don't last. Education does, and y'all are behind the grind these days. Hurry up. We have a walk ahead of us.
How am I supposed to go to school with no shoes?
Aunt said.
Did you think of that?
Elsa stared down at her son in horror. How in God's name had she forgotten that salient fact?
Elsa?
She turned, saw Jean walking toward her, carrying a scuffed, holy pair of boy's shoes.
I saw you carrying water, Jean said. I figured you was washing the kids for school.
I forgot my son had no shoes. How could I?
Jean touched her shoulder, gave her a reassuring squeeze.
We do the best we can, Elsa. Here, these shoes belong to Buster. He's outgrown them. You give them back when Aunt outgrows them.
Elsa couldn't find words to express her gratitude. This generosity was nothing short of stunning, coming as it did from one with so little.
It's how we get by,
Jean said, patting Elsa's arm.
Thank you.
The school's a mile south.
Jean cocked her head to the south.
They ain't real welcoming there.
I'd say that's true of the whole state so far, Elsa said.
Yep. After you get them set in school, you'd best go register with the state. The relief office is north of here, about 2 miles, in Welty. You want them to know you're here.
Relief. Elsa's stomach tightened at the thought. She nodded.
So, south to school, and then go back north 2 miles from here to town. Got it.
Elsa handed Aunt the shoes and loved how happy they made him.
All right, Martinellis, she said as he laced them up. Let's go.
They walked out to the main road and turned south, joining a group of children walking in the same direction. There were probably 9 children, aged 6 to 10. Loretta was the oldest child in the group. Elsa was the only adult. A blunt-nosed school bus rumbled past, spitting rocks and blowing dust. It didn't stop for the migrant children.
They passed a county hospital with a gray ambulance parked out front and finally came to the school. Green grass and trees gave it an inviting look. A crowd of laughing, talking kids swarmed the yard. They were clean and well-dressed. The migrant children moved woodenly, silently among them.
"Look at them, Mom," Loretta said. "New clothes."
Elsa tipped Loretta's chin up with one finger, saw the tears gathering in her daughter's eyes.
"I know what you're feeling, but don't you dare cry," Elsa said. "Not about this. Not with all you've been through to get here. You're a Martinelli, and you're as good as anyone in California."
Tucking her children's hands in hers, she took them across the grass, beneath the billowing American flag. Inside, the hallways were full of children. Elsa noticed the looks thrown their way and saw how the better-dressed children avoided them. A bulletin board held flyers for field trips and school functions and advertised the upcoming PTA meeting. Elsa headed into the first office she saw. She stood with her children in front of a long counter. A placard on it read, "Barbara Mouser, Administration." Elsa cleared her throat.
"Excuse me."
The woman seated at the desk behind the counter looked up from her paperwork.
"I'm here to enroll my children in school."
The woman sighed heavily and got to her feet. She was dressed in a pretty blue dress with a fabric belt, silk stockings, and sensible brown shoes. Elsa noticed that her nails were well cared for and her cheeks were nice and plump. The woman walked up to the counter, on the other side of which Elsa and the children stood.
"Did you bring report cards, transfer papers, school records?"
"We left in a bit of a rush. Times back home were hard for you Okies,
yes."
"We're from Texas, ma'am," Elsa said.
"What are their names?"
"Loretta and Anthony Martinelli. We call him..."
"Address?"
Elsa didn't know how to answer the question. The woman turned her head, yelled,
"Miss Guyman, come here! Squatters! Okies!"
"We're from Texas," Elsa said firmly.
The woman pushed a piece of paper at Elsa. "Can you read and write?"
"Oh, for gosh sakes," Elsa said. "Of course."
"Names and ages."
She handed Elsa a pencil. As Elsa wrote down the children's names, a younger woman appeared in the office, dressed in a crisp white nurse's uniform and cap. The nurse marched over to the children, went to Loretta, and began pawing through her hair.
"No lice," the nurse said. "No fever? Yet." "How old is this girl?"
the nurse asked.
11?
13, Elsa answered.
"Can she read?"
"Of course, she's excellent in school."
The nurse checked Anne's hair.
"Fine," she said at last. "Most of your kind work the fields at 11. I'm surprised your daughter is in school."
"Our kind are hard-working Americans who have hit hard times," Elsa said.
"Follow me," Mrs. Mouser said. "Not too close."
Elsa and the children followed the woman, who stopped at the end of the hall.
"Boy, in there, go."
Aunt grabbed Elsa's sleeve, stared up at her.
"You're okay," Elsa said.
He shook his head, eyes pleading for a way out of this.
"Go,"
Elsa said. Aunt sighed heavily, his shoulders slumped in defeat. With a lackluster wave, he opened the door and disappeared into the busy classroom.
"No dawdling," the administrator said, walking on ahead.
Elsa had to force herself to keep walking. Loretta stayed close beside her. At the last doorway, marked with a 7 on it, the administrator stopped.
"You," she said to Loretta. "Go on in. See those 3 desks in the back corner? Sit at one of them. Don't touch anyone or anything on your way. And for God's sake, don't cough."
Loretta looked at Elsa.
"You're as good as anyone," Elsa said.
Loretta opened the classroom door. Elsa saw the way the clean, well-dressed children snickered at her daughter. A few of the girls even leaned away from Loretta as she passed them.
A boy with red hair held his nose, and a bunch of them laughed. It took all the strength Elsa possessed to turn away from the closed door. Elsa walked back out to the main road and turned north. At the turnoff to the ditch bank camp, she kept going. At last, she came to a small, well-tended town with a big, cotton bowl-shaped sign that welcomed her to Welty, California. Main Street ran for 4 blocks. She saw a boarded-up theater, a city hall with columns out front, and a row of shops. She walked from shop to shop, seeing no help wanted signs in any windows. The state relief office was off Main Street, tucked in a square full of park benches and flowering trees. A long line of people waited to get in. She stepped into line. People didn't look at each other, nor did they speak. Elsa understood. She could tell by the hard, shuttered looks on the men's and women's faces around her that they'd waited until they had no choice but to ask for help. And they were ashamed to need anything from the government, from anyone, really. Like her, they'd always worked for what they needed, not relied on the government for a handout. Elsa's mind went blessedly blank as she stood there. She finally made her way to the front of the line. Beneath a temporary awning sat a young man in a brown suit with a thin black tie over a crisp white shirt. A brimmed brown hat sat at a jaunty angle on his head. "You here for relief?" he said, looking up, tapping his pen. "No. I'll find a job, but I was told I needed to register, just in case."
"Good advice. I wish more people heeded it. Name?"
"Elsinore Martinelli." He wrote something down on a red card.
"Age?"
"Lord," she said, laughing nervously. 39 next month."
"Husband?"
She paused. "No."
"Children?"
"Loretta Martinelli, 13. Anthony Martinelli, 8.
"Address?"
Side
of the road," he said with a sigh. "Around here?"
"About 2 miles south." He nodded.
"Squatter's camp on Sutter Road. When did you arrive in California?"
2 days ago." The young man wrote all that down on her red card, then looked up.
"We keep records of everyone who comes into the state. Your date for residency starts when you sign up, not when you actually arrive. There's no state relief until you're a resident, defined as being in the state for a year. Come back on April 26th.
"A year?" Elsa frowned. "But I hear there's no work in the winter. Don't folks need help then?"
The man gave her a pitying look. "The feds will give you some help. Commodities. Every 2 weeks."
He cocked his head.
"That's their line over there."
Elsa turned, saw the even longer line down the street. "What's commodities?"
"Beans, milk, bread, food."
"So all those folks are standing in line for food?"
"Yes, ma'am."
Elsa felt deeply sorry for the women she saw standing over there, skinny as rails, their heads bowed in shame. "That's not me," she said quietly. "I can feed my children. For now." 21. At the end of the school day, Elsa stood at the flagpole, waiting for her children. She fought a wave of dizziness and realized that she'd forgotten to pack herself a lunch when she left this morning. After signing up for relief, she'd spent more hours walking through town, looking for work. It hadn't taken long to realize that no store proprietor or diner owner would hire someone who looked as ragged and poor as she did. The school bell rang. Children poured out of the school. The school bus doors wheezed open in welcome for some of the children. She saw Loretta and Aunt coming her way. Aunt had a black eye, and his collar was ripped.
"Anthony Martinelli, what happened?" Elsa said.
"Nothing."
"Anthony!"
"Nothing, I said."
She hugged her young son.
"You're choking me,"
he said, trying to get free. Elsa forced herself to let go, and Aunt pulled away. He walked on ahead, his empty lunch bag balled up in his fist.
What happened, Loretta?
Some fifth grader called him an ignorant Okie. Aunt told him to take it back, and when he wouldn't, Aunt punched him. The kid punched back.
I'll talk to...
The teachers know, Mom. The principal came out and said the boy shouldn't have punched Aunt because we carry disease. He said, you know better than to touch him, Johnson.
He's 8 years old,
Elsa said softly. Loretta had no answer. I'll talk to him about turning the other cheek, Elsa said. It was all she could think of. What did she know of schoolyard fights or what it took to become a man? Up ahead, Aunt walked alone along the side of the road, looking small, vulnerable. The few cars that passed them stirred up dust and honked at him to get out of the way.
How about teaching him to kick a bigger boy in the privates?
I am not going to teach my son to kick another boy in that area.
Great. Teach him how to make an ice pack, then. Let him become a punching bag. Teach him we will always live this way.
Oh, Loretta, she said.
I know how bad it is. Do you? They ate fried chicken and had fruit pie slices for lunch, Mom. One of them had something called a Twinkie. It smelled so good, I accidentally made a sound, and some of the girls laughed at me. One said, look at her, eating a potato. And someone else said, she probably stole it.
Girls like that, unkind girls who think it's funny to laugh at another's misfortune, are nothing. Specks on fleas on a dog's butt.
It hurts.
Yes, Elsa said, remembering when she'd been called anyone else at school.
I know.
When they turned at last toward the camp along the ditch bank, she called out for Anthony. He stopped, waited for her.
Would Papa whoop me for fighting?
For defending yourself? No. But let's fight with words from now on, okay?
Yeah, okay. How about if I say fuck you?
Elsa almost laughed. God help her. No, Aunt, you will not say that. Aunt's shoulders slumped.
I'm gonna get punched again. I know it. He is,
Loretta said with a sigh. All Elsa could think was, we all are. That night, after a dinner of ham and potato hash, Elsa got Aunt settled in bed. None of them had said much during dinner. Loretta left the tent immediately after the meal, saying she couldn't stand the stuffiness. Elsa tucked Aunt in bed and sat with him.
It'll get better, Mom, right?
He said when he'd finished his prayers. Of course it will. Elsa stroked his head, ran her fingers through his hair until he fell asleep. She eased out of bed and looked down at him. The bruise around his eye was more pronounced now. Someone had punched him in the face, made fun of him. It made her want to hit something. Hard. Had she made a mistake in bringing them here? They'd given up everything they'd known and loved to start over here, but what if there was no new beginning here? What if it was just the same hardship and hunger they'd left behind? Or worse? She withdrew the battered metal box she'd brought with her from Texas. Opening it carefully, she stared down at the money. Less than $28. How long would that last if she didn't find work soon? She closed the box and hid it inside the box of pots and pans, and then went outside, where she found Loretta sitting on an overturned bucket. The camp lay in darkness. Elsa heard fiddle music coming from somewhere. Loretta looked up.
It makes me think of Grandpa.
Elsa could only nod. A wave of homesickness threatened to topple her. Jean approached their tent.
Come with me.
Loretta got to her feet. She looked as battered and demoralized by this day as Elsa felt. The three of them walked through the camp, past open tents and closed up cars. Dogs ran around barking. At a flat, empty place along the ditch, a crowd had gathered. There were probably 15 people here, men and women, standing around talking. Two men sat on rocks at the bank, playing fiddles.
Jean led Elsa and Loretta to a pair of women who stood near a spindly tree.
"Gals, this here's Elsa Martinelli and her daughter, Lore Ada."
The women turned, both smiled. Elsa couldn't quite figure their ages, late 40s maybe. Both were worn-looking, with wan smiles and kind eyes.
"Welcome, Elsa. I'm Midge," said the thinner of the women. "From Kansas, what they're calling the Dust Bowl, and dull it surely was."
Elsa smiled and put an arm around Loretta.
"We're from the Texas Panhandle. We know dust."
"I'm Nadine," said the other woman in a beautiful, drawling voice. She wore a pair of rimless, round eyeglasses and smiled quickly.
"From South Carolina. Can you believe I left a place where you could fish the waters? All those flyers about California being the land of milk and honey. Psh! How long y'all been here?"
"Just a few days," Loretta said. "But it seems longer."
Nadine laughed, adjusted her glasses.
"Yeah, time is odd here."
"You signed up for relief?"
Midge asked. Elsa nodded.
"I did, but, well, I don't need relief just yet."
Midge and Nadine and Jean exchanged a knowing look. They didn't say, "You will," but they might as well have. That terrible sinking feeling came back into Elsa's stomach.
"You stick with us, doll," Nadine said. "We get each other through the days."
After nearly 4 weeks in California, they had settled into a routine. While Loretta and Aunt went to school, Elsa looked for work. Any work. For any pay. She left earlier each morning and walked up the road, sometimes going north, sometimes south, always hoping against hope to find a job weeding in the fields or doing laundry. More often than not, she came up empty. Every time she bought food, her meager savings were being depleted. When she ran out of beans, she had to buy more. Aunt had to have canned milk. He was a growing boy. Now, after a long day looking for work and finding none, Elsa sat at the ditch bank on an apple crate she'd found by the side of the road. It was nearing nightfall, and there were about 30 people here, women washing clothes, men smoking pipes and talking, children playing tag and laughing. The heat of the day remained, giving a hint of what was to come in the next few months. Someone played a harmonica. A dog howled in accompaniment. Aunt had made friends with Mary and Lucy Dewey, and the three of them ran around playing hide-and-seek. Loretta talked to no one, sat by herself, reading. Elsa knew she was determined not to make a friend here. Jean hauled a metal bucket to the ditch bank and sat beside Elsa.
"It's starting to get warm already," Jean said. "Lord, these tents are uncomfortable in the summer. Maybe we'll all be working by then and be able to move."
Jean said, "maybe," in a way that conveyed no hope at all.
"How are the kids doing in school?"
"Not great, honestly, but I won't let them quit."
"Stay strong,"
Jean said, looking out at the people gathered along the ditch. Elsa looked at her friend.
"Do you ever get tired of being strong?"
"Oh, honey, of course."
5 weeks after they arrived in California, they got their first letter from Tony and Rose. It bolstered everyone's spirits.
"Dearest ones, the dust storms haven't given up, I'm sorry to say. Even so, there was another meeting this week. The government is offering us farmers 10 cents per acre if we agree to contour the land. The work is slow going, but Tony is back to spending long hours on the tractor, and you know he'd rather be on his tractor than anywhere else. The Works Progress Administration is paying out-of-work men to help us. Now we just hope for these awful dust storms to stop. And if it rains, all this hard work might mean something. Yesterday, a man came through town and promised to bring rain, called himself a rainmaker. It was something to see, I'll say that. He shot something up in the sky. We're all waiting now to see if it works. I reckon you can't prompt God that way, but who knows? We miss you all and hope you are well. Hopefully Elsa's birthday was a grand event. Happiest of days. With love, Rose and Tony.
On the last day of May, Elsa herded her children off to school and remained behind. Just this once, she was not looking for work. She had something else to do. Without a husband to help out, Elsa felt the heavy burden of both working and caring for the children. So many chores and too few hours in which to do them. It was no surprise there were few single women out here. Loretta did more than her share. Heck, these days everyone in the camp did more than their share of everything. Even Aunt pulled his weight without complaint. He was responsible for making sure there was always plenty of firewood, kindling, and paper. He spent a lot of time rummaging through the camp and along the main road for whatever he could find. He also brought newspapers home from school. Yesterday, he'd found a broken apple crate, a treasure. It took Elsa 2 hours to carry enough water back to wash all of their clothes. By the time she boiled and strained the water and poured it into the copper tub they'd brought with them from Texas, she was sweating and exhausted. Once the clothes were washed, she hung them from the interior metal tent frame. They would take longer to dry inside, but at least they wouldn't be stolen. Then she put some lentils on to soak. When those chores were done, she dragged the copper tub into the tent and then started hauling water again. Bucketful after bucketful. She hauled it from the ditch, boiled it, and strained it, and poured it into the tub. Finally, she tied the tent flap shut and disrobed, a thing she hadn't done in weeks. In the past month, they had learned, all of them, how to survive in these terrible conditions, packed in like prisoners. Baths had become luxuries rather than necessities. She stepped into the tub and crouched down. The water was lukewarm, but still it felt heavenly. Using their last scrap of soap, she washed her body and her hair, trying not to care that in places she felt only her scalp. Shivering as the water chilled around her, she stepped out and dried off, saving the water in the tub for the kids to bathe in. Heat radiated down from the canvas and up through the dirt floor as she brushed her thinning blonde hair. There was no mirror in which to check her appearance, but she didn't want one. She covered her head with her cleanest kerchief, wishing that today of all days she still owned a hat. The women would all be wearing hats. Don't think about them or yourself. This was for her children. She unpacked her best dress. Best dress, made last year from scraps of pillowcase lace and flower sacks. The last time she'd worn it had been to church in Lonesome Tree. Don't think about that. She dressed carefully, pulling up her sagging cotton stockings and stepping into worn-down shoes. Then she stepped out of the tent and into the blazing afternoon sun. Jean stood outside her own tent, holding a broom. Elsa waved and walked over.
"I think you're looking for trouble," Jean said, looking worried.
"If I am, it's about time."
"I'll be here waiting when you get back," Jean said.
Nadine walked over to join them.
"She's really going?" she said to Jean.
Jean nodded.
"She's going."
"Well, doll," Nadine said.
"I wish I had your pluck."
Elsa was grateful for the support. She walked out of camp. On the main road, the few automobiles that passed her honked for her to get off to the side. By the time she reached the school, she was covered in fine red dust. She brushed as much of the dirt off of her as she could. She would not be a coward. Chin up, she crossed the lawn and bypassed the office and walked toward the library. There was a sign on the door for the after-school PTA meeting. She opened the door just as the school bell rang and children ran out into the hallway. In the library, books lined every wall. There was a checkout desk and bright overhead lights. A dozen or so women stood clustered together, sipping coffee from china cups. Elsa noticed how well they were dressed. Silk stockings, fashionable dresses, matching handbags, hair cut and styled. At one side of the room, a long table, draped in white, held trays of cookies and sandwiches and a silver coffee urn. The women turned to stare at Elsa. Their conversation stalled and then stopped altogether. Elsa wondered how it was she'd thought a clean flour sack dress or a bath would help. She didn't belong here. How could she have thought otherwise? No, this is America. I'm a mother. I'm here for my kids. She took a step forward. Eyes on her. Frowns. At the clothed table, she poured herself a cup of coffee and took a sandwich. Her hand was shaking as she lifted it to her lips. An older woman, in a tailored tweed skirt suit and heels, with tightly curled hair that peaked out beneath a beribboned felt hat, peeled away from the cluster of women and walked resolutely toward Elsa. As she neared, she raised one eyebrow. "I'm Martha Watson, president of the PTA. You're lost, I presume."
"I'm here for the PTA meeting. My children are in school here, and I'm interested in the curriculum."
"People like you don't influence our curriculum. What you do is bring disease and trouble to our schools."
"I have a right to be here," Elsa said.
"Oh, really? Do you have an address in the community?"
"Well,
do you pay taxes to support this school?" The woman sniffed as if Elsa smelled and walked away, clapping her hands.
"Come along, mothers. We need to plan the end-of-the-year raffle. We want to raise money to get those dirty migrants a school of their own."
The women fell in behind Martha, waddling like chicks behind the mama duck. Elsa did what she'd always done when faced with derision and contempt. She walked away, defeated, left the library, went out into the now deserted schoolyard. She was almost to the flagpole when she stopped. No. This was not the woman she wanted to be anymore, not the mother she wanted to be. These women looked at her and judged her and thought they knew her. They thought she was trash. But she wasn't trash, and her children certainly weren't trash. You can do it. Could she? "They're bullies, Elsa," that was what Rose would say. "The only way to fight a bully is to stand your ground." "Be brave," Grandpa Walt would say. "Pretend if you have to." Clutching her handbag strap, she walked back into the school. At the library door, she paused, but not for long, and then opened the door. The women, a gaggle of geese, Elsa thought, turned to her. Mouths dropped open. Martha took control.
"I thought we told you."
"I heard you," Elsa said. She was literally quaking inside. Her voice wavered.
"Now you will hear me. My children go to this school. I will be a part of this. Period."
She sidled into the back row and sat down, clamping her knees together, holding her purse on her lap. Martha stared at her, lips pinched tightly together. Elsa sat still.
"Fine. You can't impose manners or breeding. Ladies, sit down."
The women took their seats, careful not to be near Elsa. For the entire meeting, more than 2 hours, no one looked back at her. In fact, they were studiously avoiding her as they talked among themselves, saying things in strident voices. "Dirty migrants. Live like hogs. Lice. Don't know any better. Shouldn't be allowed to think they belong." Elsa heard the message, but didn't care. And not caring felt good. Almost exhilarating, in fact. For once, she had not let someone else tell her where she belonged.
"The meeting is adjourned," Martha said.
No one moved. The women sat rigidly upright, facing Martha. Elsa got it. They wouldn't walk past her. They carry disease, you know. Elsa faked a sneeze. Everyone jumped. Elsa got to her feet and walked casually toward the door, taking her time. As she passed the food table, she saw all that was there. Little peanut butter and pickle sandwiches on store-bought bread with the crusts cut off, deviled eggs, a Jell-O salad, and a plate of cookies. Why not? They thought she was a dirty Okie anyway. What beaten dog didn't jump at scraps? Elsa picked up the plate of cookies and dumped all of them into her handbag. Next, she removed her headscarf and filled it with sandwiches. Then she snapped her handbag shut. "Don't worry, ladies," she said, reaching for the door handle. "I'll bring a treat next time. I'm sure y'all love squirrel stew." She walked out of the library and let the door bang shut behind her. A half hour later, Elsa got her first whiff of the camp, the stench of too many people living without sanitation on a hot May day. At their tent, she found Loretta and Aunt sitting on boxes out front playing cards. Loretta had started making the lentil stew. Smoke puffed up through the stove's short metal pipe and drifted sideways. At Elsa's arrival, Aunt jumped up to greet her, but Loretta remained seated. Her daughter looked up and said, "Hey," in that new clenched voice of hers. Aunt produced a local newspaper that was stained and torn. Across the top, in bold black type, was the headline, "Criminal element rampant in migrants flooding into state. 1,000 enter California per day."
"I found this in the trash at school. I stole it for the fire," he said. "It ain't stealing if it's in the trash," Loretta said.
"I have a surprise," Elsa said.
"A good surprise?"
Loretta said without looking up.
"Or another bad thing happening?"
Elsa touched Loretta with the toe of her shoe.
"It's good. Come on."
She herded her children toward the Dewey's tent. As they approached, Elsa smelled cornbread cooking. Elsa called out a greeting at the closed flaps. The tent flaps opened. 5-year-old Lucy stood there in her burlap sack dress, skinny as a stalk of alfalfa, with 4-year-old Mary standing so close the two girls looked conjoined. Lucy smiled, showing off two missing teeth.
"Miss Martinelli," she said, "what are y'all doing here?"
"I brought you something," Elsa said. Inside the murky darkness that smelled of sweat, Elsa saw Jean sitting on a box, sewing by candlelight.
"Elsa," Jean said, getting to her feet.
"Come out," Elsa said. "I have a treat." They gathered outside, around the small stove, where cornbread baked in a black cast iron skillet. Jean sat down in the chair by the stove. The four children plopped down in the weed-infested dirt, all cross-legged, and waited quietly. Elsa opened her purse and took out a handful of cookies. Aunt's eyes lit up.
"Wowza!"
He cupped his hands together and reached out. Elsa put a sugar-dusted cookie in each pair of hands and then handed a small peanut butter and pickle sandwich to Jean, who shook her head.
"The kids need it more."
Elsa gave Jean a look.
"You need to eat too."
Jean sighed. She took the sandwich, took a bite, and moaned quietly. Elsa tasted a cookie. Sugar, butter, flour. The single bite hurled her back in time to Rose's kitchen.
"How did it go?" Jean asked quietly.
"They made me president. Asked where I bought my dress."
"That good, huh?"
"I took all their treats. That was the highlight."
"I'm proud of you, Elsa."
Elsa couldn't remember anyone ever saying that to her, not even Rose. It was surprising how much those few words could lift one's spirit. "Thank you, Jean." The children ran off, laughing together. It was remarkable and inspiring to see how one sugary treat could revive them.
Later, they'd have the sandwiches. When they were alone, Jean said quietly,
"I'm in trouble, Elsa."
"What's wrong?" Jean put a hand on her flat stomach and looked sadly at Elsa.
"A baby?"
Elsa whispered, lowering herself to sit on a crate beside Jean. "Born here? Good Lord."
"How am I gonna feed this one? I don't reckon I'll ever get milk in my breasts."
Once, Elsa would have said, "God will provide," and she would have believed it. But her faith had hit the same hard times that had struck the country. Now, the only help women had was each other.
"I'll be here for you," Elsa said, then added, "Maybe that's how God provides. He put me in your path and you in mine."
Jean reached over for Elsa's hand and held it. Elsa hadn't known until right then how much difference a friend could make, how one person could lift your spirit just enough to keep you upright. 22.
Dearest Tony and Rose, June in California is beautiful. Hard red flowers have burst out in the cotton fields. Imagine the look of it across thousands of acres with the mountains in the distance. The friends we have made promise plenty of work for all when the cotton is ready to pick. I must admit, it's hard to imagine myself working in someone else's fields. I'm sure it will make me think of you and the many wonderful hours we spent tending to our grapes and our fruit and our vegetables. We miss you and think of you often and hope you are well. Love, Elsa, Aunt, and Loretta.
In June, Elsa found that if she woke at 4 a.m. and joined Jeb and the boys in line, there was usually work in the cotton fields, weeding and thinning the crop. Not every day, but most days, she worked 12 hours for 50 cents. The pay wasn't good, but she spent carefully, and they survived. When Loretta's shoes wore out, instead of buying a new pair, Elsa cut out pieces of cardboard and fit them carefully inside the shoes. Today, after a long, tiring day, she walked home with the others from the ditch bank camp who'd found work at Welty Farms, which had nearly 20,000 acres of cotton in California. The nearest field was about 3 miles north of the ditch bank camp, past the town of Welty. Jeb was beside her, walking back from work with his boys.
"There's talk that Welty might cut wages," he said.
"How can they possibly pay us less?" Elsa said.
Another man said, "So many desperate folks flooding into the state. More than 1,000 a day, I heard."
"Most of them will take any pay at all, if it means they can put food on the table," Jeb said.
"The darn farm owners can pay less and less," said another man.
"I'm Ike," he said to Elsa, extending a thin-fingered hand in greeting.
"I live at the Welty camp."
She shook his hand. "Elsa." 50 cents. That was what she'd earned today, and it wouldn't go far, and there was never any way of knowing how long this money had to last, or when she'd get work again, or what she'd be paid. What if they offered her 40 cents tomorrow? What choice would she have but to agree?
"Once we're picking cotton, we'll be better," Jeb said.
The man named Ike made a sound.
"I don't know, Jeb. I got a bad feeling. The price of cotton is down, and the damned Ag Adjustment Act is putting the squeeze on the growers again. The government wants less cotton planted to raise prices. You know what that means. Sooner or later, if the growers get squeezed, we get pounded."
"What about the summer months?" Elsa asked. "Once the cotton is thinned, it will be months before it's ready to pick. What work is there then?"
"Most of us move north pretty soon to pick fruit. We come back in the fall for cotton."
"Is it worth the gas money?" Elsa asked. Jeb shrugged.
"It's work, Elsa. We take it where we can, when we can."
Up ahead, Elsa saw women cooking in front of whatever dwellings they had. She heard the strains of a fiddle rising up, and it made her smile. Outside their tent, Loretta and Aunt sat on the buckets on the ground. Beside them, a pot of beans simmered on the stove.
"Mom, Loretta said.
I need to talk to you.
That couldn't be good. Lately, Loretta's anger had grown exponentially. She didn't complain much or roll her eyes and storm off, but somehow that made it worse. Elsa knew her daughter was eating a steady diet of outrage, and sooner or later she would explode. Sure.
Stay here, Aunt,
Loretta said, rising to her feet. Elsa followed Loretta toward the ditch they pathetically called a river. Beneath a spindly tree in full bloom, Loretta stopped and turned to face Elsa.
School ended 2 days ago.
I'm aware of that, Loretta.
Are you also aware that I'm the only 13-year-old in camp during the day?
Elsa knew where this was going. She'd been expecting it, dreading it. Yes.
7-year-olds are working in the fields, Mom.
I know, Loretta, but... Loretta moved closer.
I'm not deaf, Mom. I hear what people say. Winter in California is bad. There's no work. We can't get state relief until next April. So the only money we have is what we make working in the fields. It will have to get us through 4 months with no work and no relief money.
I know.
Tomorrow, I'm going to work with you.
Elsa wanted to say, to scream, no. But Loretta was right. They needed to save money for the winter.
Just for the summer. Then you go back to school, Elsa said. Jean can watch Aunt.
You know he'll want to work too, Mom,
Loretta said.
Aunt's strong.
Elsa walked away, pretending she hadn't heard. By July, the work in the cotton fields had ended again. There would be no more until it was time to pick the crop. Still, each day, new migrants walked or rode into the San Joaquin Valley. More workers, less work. The newspapers were full of outrage and despair on the part of the citizens, who worried that their tax dollars were being spent to help non-residents. The schools and hospitals were overrun, they said, unable to survive the demands of so many outsiders. They worried about bankruptcy and losing their way of life and being made unsafe by the wave of crime and disease they blamed on migrants. Elsa called an Explorers Club meeting and asked her children if they wanted to stay in the ditch bank camp or follow the Deweys, and many of the camp's inhabitants, north to the Central Valley to find work picking fruit. As always, it was a difficult choice in which each of them was aware how precarious their survival was. Spend money or save it. In the end, they made the choice that most of the migrants made. They packed their belongings in boxes and tore down the tent and repacked the truck for travel. They headed north behind the Deweys. In Yolo County, they moved into another field full of tents and set up camp. There, they learned to pick peaches. Elsa hated to bring Aunt into the fields with her, but there was no choice. She was a single mother, and her son was too young to stay alone all day, every day. With all of them picking, they made just enough to feed themselves and stay clothed. Certainly, there were no savings. When peach season ended, they picked up stakes again. For the rest of the summer, they joined the horde of migrants who moved from field to field, crop to crop, and learned to pick whatever was in season and be unseen by the good folks who needed their crops picked but didn't want to see the people who did the picking and expected them to move on when the season ended. They didn't go to town or see movies or even go into the libraries. They stayed in their camps, surviving together. Jean taught Elsa how to make hush puppies from ground corn, and Elsa showed Jean how the cornmeal could be made into polenta cakes, which were delicious beneath a ladle full of soup or stew. They ate casseroles made of canned tomato soup and macaroni and chopped up hot dogs. Through all of that long, hot summer, they waited for two words. Cotton's ready. The news swept the Central Valley in September. Elsa and the kids packed up in the middle of the night and drove back to the San Joaquin Valley and the ditch bank camp that had been their first stop in California. They turned onto the deep, dry ruts in the weedy field after a long, hot day of driving. Jeb's jalopy was in front of them, churning up dust.
Jeepers,
Aunt said, peering through the dirty, bug-splattered windshield.
Look at that.
In the time they'd been gone, the population of the Ditchbank camp had increased dramatically. There had to be 200 tents in the field now, filled with more desperate Americans looking for non-existent jobs. The place looked like the aftermath from a tornado, all broken-down cars and junk spread out. Jeb drove off to the right, away from the clot of tents and cardboard shacks. He found a nice spot, fairly level, with room for their tents to be side by side, but also each have a little privacy. Elsa pulled up alongside him and parked.
"Long walk to the river," Loretta said,
and then shook her head, muttering,
"I can't believe I just called it a river."
Elsa pretended not to hear.
"Let's go, explorers. Time to set up camp."
They got to work. They set up the tent and hauled out the stove and beat the lumpy, dirty camp mattress to redistribute the feathers. They stacked the buckets inside the copper tub and set them in front of the tent, alongside their washboard and broom.
"Great," Loretta said,
returning with two buckets of water.
"We're back where we started. Home sweet home."
Elsa balled up a newspaper, saw the headline, "Relief crippling the state financially," and started a fire in the stove. Loretta stood beside her.
"You know school already started, right?"
"Yes."
"You know I'm not going back, right?"
Loretta said. Elsa sighed. All she wanted, all she'd ever wanted, really, was to be a good mother. How could she accomplish that if Loretta wasn't educated? And yet, they'd been in California for less than 5 months, and they'd worked as hard as was possible, and Elsa still had less than $20 to her name. With the gas it took to follow the crops north, and the paltry wages, and the cost of goods, there was no way to get ahead. And winter was coming. Their survival depended on cotton money, and Loretta could pick as much as Elsa could, double the wages.
"Yes," Elsa said. "I know you have to pick cotton, but Aunt goes to school, period."
She looked at her daughter.
"And the minute the cotton is done, you are back in school."
The next morning, Loretta wakened before sunrise and listened for footsteps. At 4 a.m., she heard what she'd been waiting for, Jeb's voice at the tent flaps.
"It's time."
Loretta and Elsa lurched out of bed, already dressed, gathered up the rolled 12-foot-long canvas sacks they'd each paid 50 cents for, and went out of the tent. Jeb and the boys, Elroy and Buster, were there. The five of them walked out to the main road and turned right and kept walking until they came to the first welty field. There were already 40 people or so in line, some of whom had probably slept on the roadside to ensure their place. Men, women, children as young as 6, Mexicans, Negroes, Okies, mostly Okies. Small particles of fluffy white cotton floated in the air, landed on Loretta's face, caught in her hair. A row of trucks stood ready to be filled with cotton, their trailers lined with chicken wire. At sunrise, a bell rang out. The crowd of pickers grew anxious. Not all of them would be chosen to pick. By now, there were hundreds of them in line. The gates to the cotton field opened, and a tall, ruddy-faced man wearing a 10-gallon hat walked out, surveying the crowd, moving along it, picking workers.
"You?" he said, pointing to Jeb.
Jeb rushed toward the gate.
"You?"
he said to Elsa, and then to Loretta.
"And you?"
Loretta rushed into the fields, went to the row to which she was assigned. She yanked her long canvas sack around, slung the leather strap over her shoulder. The bell rang again, and Loretta reached into the nearest cotton plant and yelped in pain. When she drew her hand back, it was covered in blood. That was when she saw the spikes on the plant. They looked like darning needles. Wincing, she tried again, more slowly this time. Still, she felt her flesh tear. She gritted her teeth and kept picking. For hours, the sun beat down, until heat and dust and human sweat were all Loretta could smell. Her throat was so dry it hurt to breathe. She had drunk all the water in her canteen, almost hot enough to scald, and now there was no more. Her bag grew heavier by the minute, and her hands hurt. Nearing noon, she dragged the heavy sack behind her and moved into the line formed at the giant scales. She unhooked the strap and dropped the load and learned instantly why the other pickers hadn't removed the strap in line. It was a bad idea. Now she had to haul the bag with her bloody, aching hands toward the scales. She sagged in relief when it was finally her turn. A foreman slung a chain underneath her sack and hung it on the scales.
60 pounds.
The foreman stamped a ticket and handed it to her.
You can cash this in town. Pick faster if you want to keep a job.
Loretta retrieved her empty bag, backed away, and went back to work. September was one long, hot, back-breaking day after another in the cotton fields. Elsa's hands bled, her back ached, her knees hurt. Hour after scorching hour, dawn to dusk, hunched over, picking bowls of cotton from between the razor-sharp spikes. There were no bathrooms in the fields, so it wasn't easy for a woman at certain times of the month, and Loretta had just begun menstruating. Still, there was work. Steady work. By mid-October, Elsa and Loretta had learned how to pick nearly 200 pounds of cotton each per day. That meant $4 a day in combined earnings. It felt like a fortune, even with the 10% welty charge to cash their wage chits. They'd been slow to get to the 200-pound mark, but everyone knew there was a learning curve for picking. In November, when the weather turned blessedly cool and the last of the cotton had been picked, Elsa's metal cash box was stuffed with dollar bills. She had stocked up on food, bought bags of flour and rice and beans and sugar, as well as cans of milk and some smoked bacon. There was no refrigeration at the camp, no ice, so she learned to cook in a new way. Everything came from bags or cans. No fresh pasta or sun-dried tomatoes, no homemade baked bread or nutty flavored olive oil. The kids learned to love pork and beans doctored with corn syrup and chipped beef on toast and hot dogs cooked over an open fire and saltine crackers fried in oil and dusted with sugar. American food, Loretta called it. Elsa tried to hold back as much as she could for the winter, but after so many months of deprivation, she found her children's joy at supper time and their full bellies to be her undoing. Many of the camp's inhabitants, including Jeb and the boys, had moved on, looking for an extra few days' work in fields farther away, but Elsa had decided to stay put, as had Jean and her daughters. It was time for Loretta to be back in school. On this Saturday morning, Elsa got out of bed and swept the tent's dirt floor. She didn't know how it was possible, but dirt grew overnight, in the dark, like mushrooms. She swept the debris outside and opened the tent flaps to let in fresh air. Outside, a layer of cool gray fog lay over the camp, blurring the sea of tents. She pulled an old newspaper from the salvaged fruit box where they stored every scrap of paper they could find and read the local news as the coffee brewed. The aroma brought Loretta stumbling out of the tent, her dark hair a snarl of tangles, her bangs a fringe well past her jawline.
"You let me sleep," she growled.
"No work today," Elsa said.
"You start school on Monday."
Loretta poured herself a cup of coffee. She pulled the bucket closer to the stove and sat down.
"I'd rather pick cotton."
Elsa wished she had Rafe's gift for words, his eloquent way of shaping a dream. Loretta needed that now. She needed some spark to relight the fire she'd had before her father's abandonment and hardship had snuffed it out. Unfortunately, Elsa didn't know much about dreaming. But she knew about school and the hardships that came from not fitting in.
"I have an idea," she said.
Loretta gave her a skeptical look.
"We are going to have breakfast and go somewhere." "My joy is uncontainable."
Elsa couldn't help smiling, even as her daughter's hopelessness wounded her. Elsa made a quick breakfast of oatmeal cooked in canned milk and topped with sugar for the kids, and then hurried them to get dressed. By 9 o'clock, they were headed out from the camp, walking through a brown field draped in diaphanous gray fog.
"Where are we going, Mommy?"
Aunt asked, holding her hand. She loved that he still held her hand in public.
"To town." "Ooh," Loretta said. "What fun we'll have standing in line for the few dollars we earned this week."
Elsa elbowed her.